the Sheol in Gemara. Gemara says that when the sin was committed, the eating from the tree of wisdom, 39 shlalot, curses, were meted out by Hashem to the serpent, to Chava, to Adam, and to the earth itself, which gave forth originally fruit or vegetation, a growth that was not in accordance with the command of Hashem. Hashem had waited until this moment to give out those curses. 10 each, and 9 to the earth. We know what the curses were to the serpent. Generally, the transformations took place in the serpent. The fact that he became the angel of death, like the serpents represent them, eating earth and so on, snake. And Adam has to work, came down to earth, driven out of Gan Eden and so on. Now the Gemara tells us the 10 curses that were given to Chava, meaning to woman. Every woman suffers these 10 items. First, the Gemara says from the Pesukim, the sentences mentioned in the Chumash. First, Hashem said, Harba arbe etzvonech veheronech. This means a woman suffers with blood. One is the blood of Nida, menstruation, physical suffering. Second is the Dam Betulin, blood of womanhood. In the process of becoming a woman, she has blood, Dam Betulin. That is at the moment of marriage. That's two. Third curse was Itzvonich, which is the curse of the suffering and having to raise children. There's a lot of aggravation that goes into raising children. As they grow, the troubles and toils increase. And these are burdensome primarily to the mother. The father is not home. He doesn't have to witness the different types of aggravations that children give to parents. He sees them rarely. And the mother is constantly with a child or the children. She suffers mainly in raising a child. The fourth is Sa'ad Ha'ibur. That's the suffering during 9 months of pregnancy, carrying the weight, different types of physical ailments that occur because of the pregnancy. Fifth is the suffering of childbirth, pains during childbirth. Sixth is the fact that a woman yearns for her husband by nature. A husband is one who goes out to work. Many times, he is a type that works out of town. He has to leave the home for a period of time. But when he leaves, her heart yearns for him more than he misses her. He's going out. His mind is concerned with his work. She is left alone with that yearning. This is one of the 10 types of suffering of a woman. The next is the fact that when a woman is desirous of her husband, she is generally modest. As a rule, it's the yut of a woman. She's modest and cannot speak her desire. Man can be active if he wishes. If he desires his wife, he can actively possess her. This, though, the Gemara says, let us point out that this is a characteristic of beauty in women. The fact that women contain, possess this sniut is something that makes them superior to men in this respect. These are 7. The last 3, the Gemara says, are first, the fact that she can never keep her hair uncovered. Second, that she is similar to a prisoner. Woman at Sniut is not allowed to walk out to the marketplace and talk to people in general. She's got to act refined and reserved. Pasuk says, Kol kivuda bat melech prima. The kavod of a princess or a queen is to stay indoors. Every Jewish woman is considered a princess or a queen. Therefore, it is incumbent upon her to stay mainly indoors, not to go out and associate too much with people. Last thing is that she is forbidden, in a sense, from everyone. Forbidden from everyone means she has become tied to a husband. She can have no more association with any man, no more relations with any man. Of course, the same thing holds true for the husband, too. But still, the husband, man, has a right to marry two women. He could have two wives, or at least, at the time of the Gemara, till recently, man was allowed to marry more than one wife. A woman never had this privilege. So once she was married, she was bound and she was forbidden for any other person. These are the 10. Let's just point out one item. Notice that when the Amidah speaks about these 10 curses of a woman, the 3 in order relating to children were, first, the suffering in raising children, second, the suffering during pregnancy, third, childbirth. This is not in order. Natural order is, first comes pregnancy, then comes childbirth, and then comes the suffering of raising children. Why do we have the item raising children first before even pregnancy and childbirth? It's a very strong question, but it's answered simply by the fact that we are speaking about the curse being given not to women directly, but to Chava. Now, when did this occur? This curse was given after the sin with the tree of wisdom. Remember that Adam and Chava were created on the 6th day, on Friday. On the day they were created, on that same day, Chava gave birth to Cain and Hevel. Some 50 days later, followed the murder of Hevel by Cain. So that here, a childbirth then was naturally painless. The pregnancy period was nil. It was the same day. So what came first for Chava was the suffering of raising children, seeing children grow up, seeing the sorrow, tragedy of having one son kill another, that with her, the first sadness that she found in life was the raising of the children. Then, 130 years later, she first realized what was meant by pregnancy, childbirth, when she gave birth to her first son afterwards. Therefore, in the case of Chava, we have the suffering of raising children first. Now, in the Midrash, this is the Gemara. The Midrash tells us the same 10 curses, but in the Midrash, we find the order differently. In the Midrash, we find that first comes pregnancy, then childbirth, then raising children. There we have it in the proper order. And yet there, too, it says the curse was given to Chava. The answer is that here we can now understand the Machloket. There is a debate among the rabbis of the Gemara and the Midrash. They are both rabbis of the Gemara, of course. The Midrash was simultaneous with the Gemara. The rabbis of the Midrash say that Cain and Hevel were not born the day of creation. They were born after Adam was driven out of Gan Eden, which means after the sin took place. So that, since they were born afterwards, they were on earth already, she had to go through pregnancy and childbirth after this curse was given. And of course, that was the order. Pregnancy, childbirth of Cain and Hevel, and then the suffering with raising the children. That's why it fits perfectly in accordance with the contention of the Midrash that they were born after the sin was committed on earth. And then what she suffered through first was the pregnancy, childbirth, and then raising the children. The Gemara says, speaking about the fact that tzniut in a woman is so important, modesty, that tzniut in a man too is important. Man is supposed to be modest, humble, supposed to have good character, and good character represents his relation to other people, to his fellow man, and in general, his conduct. The Gemara says that we find all these rules in the Torah. The Torah teaches us how to conduct ourselves. But the Gemara says, if the Torah had not been given to the Jews, Chas v'Shalom, there are certain things that we would know without even having to read the Torah, certain rules of conduct. For example, the laws of stealing, man can learn from the lowly ant. Because the ant, the Torah tells us, struggles so hard for its bread to get these tiny grains of wheat to store away for food. Now, the Midrash tells us, for example, no ant will ever steal from a second ant. The Midrash tells an actual case, as an example, where an ant was carrying a grain of wheat, dropped it, forgot it temporarily, and left. 100 other ants came by. Each one smelled this grain of wheat and didn't touch it, because they knew that this grain of wheat had been carried by a different ant. It belonged to somebody. It wasn't theirs. They would not steal it. Ants know the rule of consideration for their own type, not to steal. So here again, the Gemara says, if we would not have been given the Torah, we can learn this rule, this law, principle, important principle on considering another person's possession, not to steal. Third thing that it says, loyalty to one's mate. Loyalty means the person should be married to one, not to have relations chas v'shalom with another. We can learn this from the dove. Most animals, birds, mate with any other animal or bird. But the dove selects its one mate, and under no conditions will it ever mate with anyone else. Never will a dove have relations with a second bird or a second dove. One mate it has selected remains loyal and true for life. So we can learn this principle of loyalty from the dove. We can learn courtesy from the chicken. When a chicken is about to mate, a male doesn't come upon a female by force, as do other animals. The male first comes to the female, and it bows first. It says what it says, of course, the Gemara reveals to us. It says, I will buy you a coat that is will cover you entirely, if you are willing. Then, of course, the female is willing with such an offer. Later, the male bends its head down to the ground, and this meaning to say, may my crown come off, the crown of the rooster, may it come off if I have the money to buy it for you, and I don't buy it for you. It means that you'll get it as soon as I get the money. But I give you this promise, I give you my head as security. Once I get the money, you'll have it. This is courtesy, of course. How reliable it is, for another point. At least we see the courtesy and kindness of one to the other. These are lessons that humans should learn from animals. If animals have these qualities, then certainly how much more so should humans? Then the Gemara says that in the Beit HaMikdash, it is the rule who does the service there? The Kohanim. Kohanim have stipulations. A Kohen must be physically perfect. If he has a deficiency, he cannot serve. If he is tameh, he became impure by touching a rodent or a dead animal, also he cannot serve. The Gemara says that beyond a certain point he cannot serve. But what if up to the hall of the Holy of Holies, if the Kohanim are not there, that is, at present, there are no Kohanim who are perfect, then it is permissible to have even those who are physically deficient, physical defect. It is a mitzvah to have Kohanim are pure. If you haven't got pure ones, you can have those who are tameh. But in no event can you have a Yisrael serve. Still must be a Kohen. The Gemara says, now, the question arises, what if you have only two Kohanim available? One is a Balmum, he has a physical defect, but he is pure. The other is physically perfect, but he is Tameh. Which one of the two would we select? For this we have a debate in the Gemara. One rabbi says that we prefer to have the Tameh, a Kohen who is physically perfect. Though he is Tameh, let him go in. Because the rule is that it is natural that a Tameh is asur to serve with the korbanot, the sacrifices in the Holy Temple. That's for an individual sacrifice. But the korban tzibur, the public sacrifice, one that's brought to the entire Klal Yisrael, a Tameh can bring this sacrifice. Whereas a Kohen with a defect cannot. So we see that a Tameh has something over one who has a defect. The other rabbi says the contrary. The Kohen who is Tameh is at a loss because we find that the Kohen who has a defect, though he has a physical defect, he is still permitted to eat Kodashim. That means holy food for the Beit HaMikdash. Whereas one who is Tameh, he's impure, he can't even touch it. So surely he cannot eat it. So in this respect, we find that the Kohen who has a defect, has a quality over the one who is Tameh. This is the debate of the Yivere. of course, it shows the importance of the laws of Kohanim. And this is important for the future. Eventually, we will have to know these laws because we will have the Beit HaMikdash again. We will again follow the rules of the Korbanot in the Beit HaMikdash. V'heira b'yameinu. In our time, we should be zochet to see Mashiach come and the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash. The Yemen says that a person's the highest level of creation is higher than any of the other three levels, higher than the level below is animal, two levels below is vegetation, the lowest level is earth, stone. Now, what makes the person superior to the next level of animal? The power of speech. The fact that he can speak, he is called Medaber, this makes him superior. Therefore, since he is blessed as the highest level of creation with speech, a person should guard this power, guard his tongue, and never to allow any word of profanity to come from his mouth. This means not only profanity, but even something which borders upon it, even something which is similar to it, he should avoid, if possible. For example, the Torah teaches us a lesson. The Torah tells us, the very beginning, Hashem said to Noah, take 2 or 7 of each animal in existence onto the ark. Select from the behemoth, the animal which is tahor, which is pure, which means which is kasher, and from the behemoth, asher einena tahora, the animal which is not tahor. That's a long phrase. Animal which is not tahor. The Torah could have said, the animal which is tahor, animal which is tameh. Tameh is 3 letters. Which is not tahor is 8 additional letters. And the Torah is very careful about the letters that it uses. Every letter of the Torah has mountains of laws attached to it. Here the Torah did not skip. It added 8 additional letters, 3 long words, when it could have used 1 simple word, tameh. The Torah avoided the use of the word tameh where possible. He used the words which is not pure, rather than saying something which is tameh. Now, of course, we do find the word tameh in the Torah later on. It is used. But the fact that the Torah began with this phrase, instead of using the word tameh, this proves, the Torah teaches us that we should always try to avoid saying something which is not 100% pure. If possible, avoid something which is not clear, pure. Keep your tongue clean. Yemenah shows us an example. Were 2 students of Hillel. One was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Or, Yemenah says, this story happened with Rabbi Nakadosh, 2 students, one was Rabbi Yochanan. They spoke about the fact that when you press out grapes to get wine, or when you press out olives to get oil, there are different laws. You have to watch out, you press out the grapes, that they should be put into pure kelim b'ra tahor. But olives, pressing out for oil, you do not require kelim b'ra tahor, utensils. So these 2 students, they asked this question. One asked the question, why will we press grapes? Do we do it with tahara, purity? Do we press olives? We do it with tum'ah. The other student asked, why do we press our grapes with purity? And we do not press olives with purity. So he phrased the word, but he wouldn't have to use the word tameh. So the rabbi said, it was either Hillel the rabbi or the Ben HaKadosh said, they are positive, they're certain, this student is going to become a very great leader among the Jews. And shortly afterwards, we find Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan became the chief rabbis. Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai was the Nasi. Rabbi Yochanan became the chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. Both cases, it was, came true. Even it says, too, that person should guard his tongue from giving bad news. Even as was a Dav Kana, became very ill, and the rabbis got together, they wanted to find out how he was. They sent of Yeshua to investigate. And they told him, find out, notify us. He came there and found that Kana had passed away already. So he tore his garment, Kriya, and he returned to them, crying. He was coming back to them, his garment torn, he was crying. So they said to him, he passed away. He said to them, you said it. You said the bad word. Say the word passed away. I didn't say it at all. One who says this is a fool. This, the Shulchan Aruch says, a person should never be the carrier of bad tidings, even when it pertains to a relative, any relative. It is forbidden to notify a relative of the passing of any kind of a relative, including a parent, unless it is to notify a son who must say Kaddish, or no other relative at all. This, of course, would at the same time save the relative having to sit Shiva. If 30 days passes without the relative being notified about the death of one that close, after 30 days, there's no requirement of Shiva anymore. It's just 1 hour, approximately an hour, a little less, short period of time that he has to sit Shiva, that's enough. So this is how careful a person is supposed to be. The Yilin says, to show us this lesson, that Rav met Rabbi Chiya, who was his uncle, and Rabbi Chiya asked him, Rabbi Chiya's brother married Rabbi Chiya's sister, meaning he had a brother from his father, and he had a sister from his mother. These were second marriages, so that this brother and his sister were not related at all. They could get married. If a man has a son, he marries a woman who has a daughter, first marriages, and they are raised together, they are still allowed to get married to each other. Though they are raised as brother and sister, but they are not related at all, they could get married. This brother and sister were both the parents of Rav. And when Rav came to Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Chiya asked him about his brother and sister. He asked him, is your father alive? They both passed away. So Rav answered, why don't you ask if my mother is alive? Chiya asked, is your mother alive? He said, I didn't answer yet whether my father is alive. And Chiya said to his servant, take my shoes off. The person says, Shivi must take his shoes off. Take my shoes off and bring my clothes to the mikveh. Kibbeh says, this one sentence teaches us three rules. One, that an abel, one in the morning, is not allowed to wear shoes. Two, that if the Avel gets this news after 30 days, and there is no 7 days of mourning, it is only one day of mourning. And three, that this one day of mourning doesn't mean a whole day. Even part of the day, the shortest part of the day, is equal to the entire day, which means an hour or even less is enough. That's why he said, take my shoes off, and at the same time, I'm ready to go to the mikveh to wash, which is forbidden for an abel. These three lessons we learn from this one case. Now the Yemenis is further. Another case where a man was sent by the rabbis to find out how the price of wheat is on the market. Is it up or down? So this man had learned something about these rules, and when he came back, they asked him, is the price of wheat good, the market? He said, well, the price of oats are good. But they said to him, telling us the price of oats, this information, go give to the animals. Animals eat oats. So he said, what did I do wrong? I'm not supposed to tell you bad news about the price of wheat, so I told you something that would refer to it. How else could I have answered it? So they said, you could have said, well, the price of wheat was good last year. We would have understood. Or you could have said the price of lentils is good. Something which is food for men, not food for animals. This shows how the rabbis were careful in expressing themselves. The words they used, chosen and selected so carefully before they let out of their mouths. The Gemara says that the time of the Beit HaMikdash, in the time of the Gemara, it was a mitzvah for every Jew, according to the Torah, every Jew had to go to the Beit HaMikdash 3 times a year to bring a korban and to eat from this korban in the Beit HaMikdash. This was a korban chagigah, a holiday korban, which is divided. Part of it is burnt on the mizbeach on the altar, part of it is eaten by the kohen, and part of it is eaten by the Yisrael who brings it. So this was customary, and every Jew going up, this was called Oleh Regel, you had the roads filled with people going to the Beit HaMikdash. When they got there, of course, they were able to receive these korbanot in a wholesale manner. The Kohanim were so busy doling out these pots that they couldn't look carefully to whom they were giving it. There was one goy who figured to make profit, to go and have a good meal free. He went up with them to, on Pesach, to the Beit HaMikdash, pretended he was a Jew, and then they handed him a portion of meat, and he ate it. So when he came back, he said to Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira, who was living in the city of Netzivis, he said to him, I read in your Torah, it says that a goy is not allowed to eat from this korban. Well, the joke is on you, because I eat from this korban the best portion, the best piece of meat. Yehuda said to him, I don't think that you are so smart, because they're fooling you. You eat for the best meat, they give you the worst portion. You want best meat and really put it over on them, ask them for the meat close to the tail. That's the best part of the meat. That, of course, is the part that's burnt on the altar. Do they give you the part for the tail? He said, no. He said, when you go there, tell them to give you a part for the tail. This guy went back the next time, and he said, give me the meat that's close to the tail. So the Kohanim there said, what does he say? This belongs to Hashem, this part. They said to him, who told you to give you the meat from the part of the tail? So he said, greatest authority of all. You've never been told that. They said, ah, he said that, and that means this was a message for us. Investigate this person. They investigated further and found he was a goy, and they put him to death. And they sent a message to Yehuda ben Beteira saying, Shalom to you, Yehuda ben Beteira. You are in the Tzivit, and your powers spread so far and wide that it covers Yerushalayim. This was the greatness of Yehuda. Of course, the question arises, Tosafot asks, how come that Yehuda himself did not go to the Beit HaMikdash? He stayed home. All Jews went. Why didn't he attend there too? A number of answers are, first place, he was very old, and this required going by foot. He couldn't walk that far. He stayed home. Secondly, he did not own any land personally. One who owns land in Eretz Yisrael must go to the Beit HaMikdash. If he does not, he is not required to go, or he cannot go. Third, the Tzivin, according to Midrash, this city itself is considered outside of Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, anyone living outside of Eretz Yisrael is exempt from this mitzvah. Oleh Regel is required for every Jew living in Eretz Yisrael only to go to the Beit HaMikdash these three times, not one outside. Again, interesting to note that the Ramban brings this. One of the commentaries on the Ramban, Mishnah Lamelech, asks, oh, you never heard of such a ruling. Where does this come from? But Tosafot says that a person living outside of Eretz Yisrael is exempt from this mitzvah. After all, it's a mitzvah in Torah. Why should he be exempt? It says every Jew is supposed to go to Beit HaMikdash. The later commentaries show proof that this is so. Because we find the law of the prayer for rain, which is said after Sukkot. In Israel, of course, it's said after Sukkot, 2 weeks after Sukkot, whereas here we say it much later, December 5th. The Gemara explains why do we say it 2 weeks after Sukkot, because we know that the furthest, the remotest part of Eretz Yisrael is a two-week journey from the Beit HaMikdash. Therefore, we allow all Jews to return home, even those who live the furthest away from the Beit HaMikdash, to return home before the rains begin. Once the prayer for rain begins, then automatically it starts raining. So to have these travelers go in safety, journey in comfort without rain, we hold back the prayer for rain till they have reached home. Now, if we would say that people living outside of Eretz Yisrael too are required to come to the Beit HaMikdash, What's the use of waiting only 14 days for the last Jew in Israel to get back? What about those who live further? They wouldn't be covered by this delay. This proves that it is a fact that only those in Israel were required to come to the Beit HaMikdash on these three holidays. The Rebbetzin says those who go on a mission to perform a mitzvah are guarded from heaven. They will not be harmed. No harm will come to them, and they will suffer no loss of any kind. For example, the Torah says that when the Jews went up to the Beit HaMikdash, they left their homes, walked that long distance, they left their homes without anyone to take care of them. Animals roaming around, chickens, others who could be harmed easily. No time will a wild animal destroy a cow, steer, anyone in a flock. No time will a cat or a weasel attack a chicken. Surely, if these items who are in constant danger of being killed if they're not watched, and they are safe, then surely a person is safe. This pasuk of the Torah, we learn that a person, the act of performing a mitzvah, is assured safety from heaven. No harm will befall. And we're speaking now about the Jews going to Yerushalayim. The Yemenis says, by the way, a statement, how come that in other cities, the Galil, Siberias, that there are special kind of fruit there? Fruit that is so rich, so delicious, that it's unmatched by any country in the world. You do not find such fruit growing in Yerushalayim. How come that you have in Tiberias such healthful spas, warm springs, that are healthy for a person to bathe in? Why isn't such a blessing, these natural waters, why aren't they found in Yerushalayim? Why not give that blessing to a holy city? The answer is that Hashem made it so that there be no special fruit growing in Yerushalayim, no healthy waters, so that a person would never say, I'm going to Yerushalayim on the holidays because at the same time I can get these fruit, I can go to this health spa, bathe in these waters. That the motive of a person should be completely pure just for the sake of the mitzvah to bring the korban to the Beit HaMikdash and nothing else. But the Gemara says in relation to this last statement, a person is not harmed during the performance of a mitzvah. We have a rule that before Pesach, a person must search out every last vestige of chametz in his home or in his property. If there is a pile of stones, rocks, landslide that came upon a person's property, and he knows that under that landslide there is a particle of bread, some chametz, he's got to search out that chametz. But if there is any danger, he might stick his hand into this pile of stones, there might be a snake lurking there, then he is free. He is not required to clean out that chametz if there is danger. So the Gemara asks, how could this person be harmed by the snake? We just said that a person in the act of performing a mitzvah is guarded from heaven against any harm. No harm can befall him. Why should he be in danger of the snake? The Gemara says, because perhaps he may have dropped a needle or a coin there under that pile of stones. And then putting his hand in, he'll have a mind, I'll look for that piece of bread, but I'll also look for that coin or a little item of property that I have. Therefore, his kevanah will not be that pure. In a case like that, it is not considered a pure performance of his fat. He will not be protected. The Yemeda asks, is that so? The Yemeda says, b'feirush, clearly. This is a very interesting statement. The Yemeda says that a person who gets into the habit of giving tzedakah regularly, but aside from this, every day he takes a dollar or a coin. He uses the term dollar even. A person takes a certain sum of money each day and says, I give this sum to tzedakah on condition that my children should live. No harm should happen to them. Or, I give this sum of money on condition that I receive Gan Eden, that I be assured of having Gan Eden. The person who does this, the Gemara says, is a complete tzaddik. Here we have proof. His kavanah is not pure. Mitzvah is give charity. He is giving charity. But at the same time, he has two motives involved. One, to give the poor man a charity. Second, his own, whether it's selfish gain or whatever, it is still his own personal gain. Here it's his personal gain that is in the same motive, same act. But yet we find that the Gemara says this person is a complete tzaddik. The mitzvah is perfect. So why do we say here that if he searches for this chametz, the mitzvah is not pure because he may have a mind that he wants to find a coin to? Gemara answers that there is a difference. It's not that his motive would be wrong. It's that when we say that a person is guarded from heaven against any harm in the act of mitzvah, this means if there is a possibility of harm befalling him. Only a possibility. And if there is a definite case of danger prevalent, then he will not be guarded from heaven. A person is not permitted to place himself in open jeopardy when performing a mitzvah. This thing shows the case of Shmuel the Navi. Hashem said to Shmuel, go to King David and anoint him as king. This means that he was going there to perform a mitzvah commanded by Hashem. Shmuel said to Hashem, I cannot go, it's dangerous. King Shaul hears about this, he'll kill me. How could he say that? No, your mitzvah is guarded. Hashem himself told him to go. But Hashem said to him, right, you cannot go that way, go in a roundabout way with carrying of an animal as a sacrifice, which would take off suspicion from you. We see proof from here that if there is definite danger, there is no protection from heaven for the person doing the mitzvah. That's why in the case of the pile of stones, if there's a possibility of a snake, which means a snake is usually there, then he is exempt, freed from the performance of the mitzvah of searching for the chametz. The Gemara says that Rav was the chief rabbi of the yeshiva, and he was asked by his students, what do you say about students coming to the yeshiva, getting up very early in the morning before light, or coming to night classes much after dark, when it's dangerous to go in the streets or to go through the roads? There's definitely danger. You say that it is permissible. Should they go to the yeshiva? Rav answered, let them come. I take it upon myself, on my throat should come any trouble that should befall them. So certain am I that going to perform a mitzvah, they are 100% safe. They said, what about going home afterwards? He said, home I cannot guarantee, because after the study is over, because I was finished. Coming here, you could definitely do it.